BFF with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
The superstar Jenny Green back with the Electric Disco at 7 o'clock tomorrow from her house. That's the way to do parties, Marie, from your house virtually.
That is actually the only way to do parties now, because you can't go anywhere.
Well, there's no tidy up. I think it's one to stay with. Anyway,
no guests, no tidy up. Perfect.
It's brilliant. It's Friday the 15th of January and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Alan Cawley and Kevin Palmer are with us to preview the biggest game of the Premier League so far.
It's a big game for the club. It's a big game for the players, for the fans. I'm really looking forward to it because, of course, we are in a good moment of form at the moment.
You know, how it looks in the moment with all how the football they play again. Man City is one game behind and is very close as well. So you have constantly to think about other teams. We don't do that. We just try to win our football games. And for this, we need to perform on our highest level because United is good. They always were. And that's it.
In GAA, Damien Lawler is with us to talk retirements, all-stars, finances and when we'll see action again.
There are some who feel that the 2021 league should be postponed, while others would like to see the leagues being played before a club campaign, with the inter-county series following later in the year.
Plus, we have some rugby news to cover with Dunica, and there are Brexit bills to pay. And are there Brexit bills to pay for our horses to race at Cheltenham?
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting to Jane all about that. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, 5 days of homeschooling. I've never been more excited for a weekend. Just have 2 days off.
We do have 4 children, so that's a lot of homeschooling.
And you ask Jenny, I'm not doing any part of it. I'm doing PE and maths. That's my areas of expertise. And even, I'll be honest with you, I've had to bunk Sophie over to Jenny because, you know, she's, you know, her maths level is leaving me behind. So
I like that you've divvied it up though. And PE, that's a good one.
PE, get him out. Get him out.
Get outside and play there.
Exactly. Give him a basketball with dad. No, it's considered. I am a little bit low though because, like we were saying, we were meant to be nailing down for an incredible weekend of rugby. We should be halfway through Northampton, Leicester. There was brilliant games. The Ospreys were taking on Worcester, Poe, London Irish. Why am I naming them when they're all gone?
I have no idea. Do you want to put the tissue away now?
Yeah, Munster, Claremont. Yeah, so it was to be a great weekend. There was action today though. Leinster A took on Ulster A and Ulster A came out on top 37-14. It must have been a great one to kind of get. Very limited game time now with no AIL, so you need your squads. And we were chatting about Kieran Campbell, who's taken over the under-20s. He would have looked after that Ulster team, who've done the double over Leinster now, so they'll be delighted. Big display by Bill Johnson, 17 points. Tom O'Toole got a run out and Ryan Beard. So
it was great to be able to see it as well, that they were actually streaming it.
It was brilliant. It was so good.
It's so simple yet so clever.
Who thought of streaming things? Geniuses. So yeah, but there is a lot going on in rugby. Rugby Australia are looking at running a mini World Cup. They're saying during our summer, their winter, that they could host maybe the Southern Hemisphere teams and the Six Nations. And I think comments like this just show how disjointed rugby is at the moment. You know, weren't we chatting about this, you know, a global calendar?
When was that? Was yeah, that last year?
Yeah, well, it was lockdown one. And I think we were closer to it in times like that. So it's just a bit disappointing. There was good news, though, that we're going to get another game for one of our Interpro teams. Connacht's Pro 14 clash with the Ospreys will go ahead on Sunday the 24th, so another good one, and good for Irish players to put their name forward for selection coming into you know, the Welsh game on the 7th of Feb. So yeah, a lot going on in rugby.
There is, it's good though, it is good. But you know what as well, because I think we were expecting to be talking about on-field action, that anything seems interesting now. They want to talk about a mini World Cup in Australia, bring it on, let's talk about it.
I was there like this, oh, Eddie Jones is naming a 28-man squad. That's incredible. And then you just realise, well, normally he ain't named 32, so he's just given 4 lads some time off.
Anyway, look, we will get excited about anything these days. So I think everybody got a little bit excited this morning because in the Racing Post, Willie Mullins, he aired some concerns about the financial impact that Brexit could have on Irish connections sending horses to race in Britain. Mullins is going to become the first trainer to send a horse to race in Britain post-Brexit when Grand G. runs at market raise in tomorrow. So there was a big concern that in order for Grangey to run in England, a VAT payment of 19% of the value of the horse would have to be made to the British government. So there was a big outcry this morning. A lot of people were asking questions and wondering about that. But since then, there have been some developments because it has been quite confusing. But Jane Mangan joins us on the line now, and she has some clarity for us, Jane.
Well, we sought some clarity after getting a little bit of a fright over our Weetabix this morning, reading that article and Willie Mullen suggesting what he was having to go through to get Grangey to market raising tomorrow. And immediately our minds, we just go from 0 to 60. We were thinking of, there was 181 Irish runners at the Cheltenham Festival last year. Imagine the tax bill that would incur. And of course, there is a 3-month delay in getting it back. But rest assured, we did make some phone calls and did a bit of research, and I have been speaking to the team at BDO Ireland today, and they clarify the situation. So with regard to UK import VAT, we were led to believe that we'd be paying 19% on the value of the horse and be receiving that back within 12 weeks. But actually, the BDO have suggested and have clarified for me that there is a solution. It is called temporary admissions procedure, where you can apply to the tax office of the respective country you are travelling to, which will mean you have no VAT costs. So basically, the BDO are working closely with the Breeding and Racing Industries and Horse Racing Ireland to clarify this situation. And obviously, I don't think this is a permanent solution, but it's definitely better than what we read over our breakfast tables this morning. So no 19%. Can you imagine? Album photo, what's the valuation on him? It's not small. Nearly 20% of that would be quite the bill.
So Cheltenham would have had a lot of bills if this was to come to pass. So BDO, they're an international firm of experts, and in accountancy is what they feature in mostly. But you would think when you're talking about a temporary admissions procedure, that sounds like it's going to be a whole lot of paperwork, Jane.
It does. The BDO actually take care of that for you. Obviously, everybody's different in how they want to handle these things. I think I'm led to believe that if a horse travels a number of times, the same admissions procedure stands for the individual horse. But look, this is the 15th of January 2021. We're learning every day. I suppose the important thing is that we get the right information and circulate that rather than getting third-hand information and running with it. And we're all guilty of doing that. And I just think it's very serious when you read headlines and you automatically jump to drastic conclusions. I think it's in everybody's best interest that we work together and try to get the right information out there. So look, temporary admissions procedure, if you need more information, BDO Ireland is the port of call I would recommend. And it's a great position to be in, to be travelling these horses to the UK. They are obviously worth travelling with if you think they are. And look, Willie Mullins is contesting a good race at Market Raising tomorrow, and hopefully he won't just be the first Irish runner in the UK post-Brexit, he might be the first winner.
There'll probably be a lot of experts, I'd say, now lining up, Jane, to figure out how this works. And I'd say there'll be a lot of people as well who'll be getting on to you directly on Twitter to try and figure it out. Well, I'll have some good news. Willie Mullins has expressed relief after it emerged that he will not have to make that VAT payment. So I'd say he'd be very happy with you, Jane, as well, that you went about and found out this information. But just in general, Jane, like, this seems to be like a bit of a stumbling block today to get from where we were this morning to where we are this evening, which is a little bit clearer on what needs to be done. But just in terms of the next few months, and you know, we're counting down to Cheltenham here already on the show, do you envision there have been any other big complications?
I think the sale of horses is huge. At the moment, if you sell a horse to the UK, there's a 20% VAT charge. And I don't think that's sustainable. It's not to anybody's benefit bar the taxman. And if we're going to continue an open market, and I would hope that we would make a resolution that we can. And obviously, we're working through times where VAT is not the priority. The priority is every time you turn on the news, the numbers that you see there. But as it stands, I think between Britain and Ireland, we're so close, interlinked, particularly in the industry of racing and breeding, that I would like to see that we have basically our BHA and Horse Racing Ireland continuing to work together to reach a resolution whereby we can continue to trade fairly freely.
Jane, just on that, is this how we're going to learn by people like Willie Mullins, you know, who excels on the track, but no, by him actually sending a horse over, so that we're asking these questions not a week out before Cheltenham?
Yeah, I suppose it's not even just for racing, Donegal. I suppose in light of a runner tomorrow, we kind of put the pedal on the accelerator and got the information as quickly as possible. But even if you wanted to send a mare to the UK to be covered or a British mare come to Ireland, it's still, she falls under the temporary admissions procedure. So that mare can come to Ireland, be covered at an Irish stud and go back and vice versa. So I suppose the breeding industry is so interlinked with racing. They both fall under the same banner. And look, I'm every day learning and just trying to make sure that it comes from the right source. And thankfully, BDO contacted me today and we had a good discussion about it. And I hope it's helpful to people. I know, just judging by the response online, a lot of people are relieved.
They absolutely are, Jane. So will Willie Mullins' horse Grangy, will the journey be worthwhile? Because it has been eventful already.
Well, hasn't he learned something already? Because I can imagine the team Willie Mullins is putting together for Cheltenham. He's learned a lot with this one experiment. Now, he sent Panic Attack to Market Raisin here last year and she won this bumper impressively. She was a four-year-old. Grangy is five. Now, she's got Eileen Dover, a four-year-old filly of Pam Sly's in here to beat. She's two from two so far and has looked very impressive. But so was Grangy when she won her bumper on debut, her only start to date at Galway. Nico de Bonneville obviously takes the ride because Willie can send over one of his own jockeys for obvious reasons. Now, there's only seven runners in here, but I think she deserves her place in the lineup. And win, lose or draw, she has proved a worthwhile experiment.
Yeah, absolutely, Jane. And then all the action really is all eyes at home. Punchestown this Sunday, and Invoy Allen looking to stretch his unbeaten career record. How do you think that'll go?
Yeah, this is a real treat, Donegal. Obviously, Invoy Allen turning up any day of the week in public is a treat for anybody to behold, but the fact that Asterion for launch, that he's going to have meaningful opposition. This is a grade 3 in name, but it's more competitive than the grade 1 he won at Fairy House in Nature. Asterion for launch and himself, their hurdles ratings suggest that Asterion wins every day. He's rated 160 over hurdles versus Asterion's 154, but they're both top level winners over hurdles. And Envoy Allen has to concede £11 to the grey horse of Willie Mullins's, who we saw on St. Stephen's Day taking a tumble early in Limerick. So Envoy Allen has been flawless. As you say, unbeaten. He's 10 from 10. He's 3 from 3 over fences. But this guy, Asterion for launch on a right-handed track over 2.5 miles, has his optimum conditions, and I hope he'll give him a race. But Envoy Allen to me is the most exciting horse in training, and I think after this Sunday he'll have learnt even more on his quest to stardom.
In the Moscow Flyer Novice Hurdle, Jane, will all eyes be on Dreal Deal?
Yeah, probably will, Marie. He's such an interesting horse. He's gone from a rating in the 80s up to 141, and now, because his rating is so high, his owner trainer Ronan McNally has put him into graded company for the first time. So now it's a case of sink or swim. Will he be competitive at this level? He's got seven opponents in here to beat, including Fire Attack and Master McShee, who to me is very interesting. He's officially the highest rated horse in here of horses that have ratings. And the last time we saw him for his owner trainer Paddy Corkery was winning impressively a handicap at Leopardstown's Christmas Festival. So there's two, this is a grade two, but the top most interesting horses to me are horses that are coming straight in from handicaps for the first time. Fire Attack is another interesting horse for Joseph O'Brien, but Dreal Deal for owner breeder or for owner trainer Ronan McNally, it's all about him. Can he take the next step? And I think if he does over 2 miles, it opens up a lot of options for him, because I had it in the back of my mind that he might be a horse for the stairs, but over 2 miles in a novice race, he could be very interesting.
And then to Fairy House, the Dan and Joan Moore handicap chase. Jane, what do you fancy in this?
Yeah, the Dan and Joan Moore is so competitive every year. Fairy House tomorrow, it's going to be attritional conditions, 16 runners, and it's going to take a very good staying performance to win this. I think Fan the Blues is interesting for me, but we better start with Chatham Street Lad. Mick Winters' horse, rated 151 after that demolition in the Caspian Caviar Gold Cup at Cheltenham. He's opted to put up Simon Torrens to take £5 off to help alleviate the monster penalty he got from Cheltenham. Chosen Maith, last year's Cheltenham Festival winner, is a top weight for Gordon Elliott. But as I say, Willie Mullins has a horse in here called Fan de Blues off a rating of 136. He's still a maiden over fences, but he's a lovely lightweight of 10.5, meaning he's getting a stone off Chatham Street Lad. I think on those conditions, a lightweight might be the way to go, and depending on the market, he might be the value, because I think Mick Winter's Chatham Street Lad is likely to be top of the market with Daily Tiger of Noel Meads.
Before we let you go, Jane, I have a favour to ask. I had a few lads working in my house and they're on the road now, and they said, can you ask Jane Mangan, has she any tip for us for the weekend?
Those guys are there. Marie, have you not told them to look elsewhere for tips? Maybe Ruby tips. Midweek, but... I do like Fan de Blues in the Dan and Joan Moore Memorial, just because I think he's going to be a horse to give us a price. There's no point in tipping Envoil in, who's going to be very short odds. We want to have a few shillings on and get a bit of value. And I think Fan de Blues in the Fairy House race tomorrow for Willie Mullins off a lightweight is very attractive to me.
Right, good tips for those lads, Marie. Follow Jane on Twitter. Tax Advice Horse Racing, she's covered. Jane, thanks so much for joining us. Quick break, and we're back chatting. GA.
Thanks, guys. Lawler.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm On The Go Chicken Bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to Gaelic Games, and I'm delighted to say that Damien Lawler joins us now on the line. Damien, how are things?
Good, Marie. How are you guys?
Good. I have a really, really important question for you now. So I was thinking today, right, we've been inundated with lots of retirements, and it seems to me like we're hearing about way more retirements than we ever did before. You've been on the beat for a long time, Damien. Was it a case before that lads used to just get dropped and leave, whereas now... there is announcements coming all the time, the GPA are way more prevalent, so once they finish up, there's statements coming out?
You look at it, good question, Marie. To be honest with you, it's no different this year than any other year, really, to be honest about it. I think what's magnifying it this time around is a lot of people expected all those guys that called it a day, maybe 50 to 60% of them, to continue on into the new season because it's such a short turnaround. And then secondly, retirements are now glamorized, and they're, you know, rightly so. People get their recognition through social media or through statements. That was not always the case. What is happening now is that the lower key players that deserve to have their careers fanfared and trumpeted, they're now getting a look in as well. So I suppose a couple of trends. Players are retiring maybe a year or two earlier than they did, not in any greater numbers, but they're surprised this time at the number, considering the turnaround is so short.
It just seems like there's a huge amount, but you are right, we just probably didn't hear so much about them because of all the social media, so it's fair enough.
There was always an avenue though to retire, wasn't there? There was always maybe a session that you could have met up, or there was a dinner to finish out the year or something like that, you know, a way to wrap it up. But I think we came to a full stop with COVID, and maybe it's, you know, the way we're getting the news, as opposed to, you know, players aren't around each other as much as they probably would have, and they would have, you know, just said in the small circles, lads, I'm gone, you know, and
left the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that's it, guys. I mean, the GAA retirement is a very, very awkward, very sensitive and very delicate issue. There's no doubt about that. Like, there's a book to be written in that if either of you two want to tear into that.
No, you're
for example,
be up your alley, I'd say, now, Damien.
Expert in that.
No more books. But are you getting game time? And if you're not, and you've given 10, 15 years service, like, Donica, what you said about dinners and all that, not necessarily the case with inter-county players. A lot of them just skulk off and say nothing. They're not getting game time. The manager won't leave them go himself because their star is too bright within the community and the county. And
unless a new manager comes in, Damien.
So what do they do?
As well, like, often new managers
come in.
Yeah,
there's a clear-up, which definitely happens.
Yeah, and you see the new squad.
Very, very delicate area. And yeah, leaving the WhatsApp, Marie, is a massive, massive thing too. But it probably does seem like there's an irregular amount this time around. Maybe we probably have more time to be sitting back and noticing everything that comes into our inbox these days too.
Yeah, I guess before it was a last line, it may be at the end of a match report. Now it's a big story because there are no matches. But there was someone. I wasn't talking about these lads, by the way. This was just a complete observation over the last few weeks, because these lads, I'd say, if anything, they would be kept on for as long as possible. And let's start with Chris Barrett, because he is, talk about going out really in an absolute peak of his powers. He's still an absolute fantastic player, and I think any team would be delighted to have him, Damien.
Yeah, Marie, that's the really surprising one. Chris lives in Dublin these last few years and is kicking football for Clontarf. And I remember meeting him at the All-Stars last year and just having a brief chat about the commitments he had then. And I kind of asked him, would he commit for 2019? And he wasn't saying a whole lot at that stage. But he's 33 years of age. He's had 13 seasons in the county colours at senior level. Made his debut in the league back in 2008, but after 47 championship games, he can walk off with his held very high in terms of never let the bar slip in terms of performances. And he lived on the edge as a defender, because a lot of his tussles were one-on-one, Marie, and he relished that. You know, in an era where blanket defences were there as a comfort to other defenders, Chris didn't always take that option. And I think he was an All-Star in 17, but more cognitively, he was nominated 5 times for All-Stars. And I just feel that's a measure of his consistency. I would hope, for James Horan's sake, that not too many more leave that Mayo setup, because to my eyes, looking in, there's a huge dearth of experience there now. And Chris was getting his game right up to that Dublin game a few weeks back. And it's a colossal loss, if I'm being honest about it. He was so steady, so consistent. And now you're going to look at a new full back line member and a new goalkeeper. That brings its own issue straight away too.
Yeah, Damien, crossing codes to hurling and Kilkenny. Paul Murphy, 4 All-Irelands, he departs as well today.
He departs, Dunica. And again, you know, at the end of the day, maybe there was moves there to freshen up that Kilkenny team and to bring in younger players and stuff like that. But Paul Murphy, as you say, 4-time All-Ireland winner, but I think he was a leader on and off that field. I think he was the Seamus Coleman of that team, to be honest with you. Very, very much undersung. He only turns 32 later in the month. And I think, though, in the way he lived his life and the way he treated people, and I know he's a shining light for the Defence Forces as well, I think he's going to be a colossal loss to the actual culture in Kilkenny. And obviously then people have been making reference in the last week or two about the pressure that Brian Cody is allegedly supposed to be under down there. Now, Brian Cody will feel no pressure whatsoever. But if you are going to be keeping a happy camp around you, people like Paul Murphy are badly needed. And, you know, All-Stars in 4 years as well, 5 Leinster titles. And the last few years where Kilkenny haven't been winning as much, and maybe his guaranteed starting spot is no longer there, still, I'd be doing all I could to have him on the sidelines and on the margins. But I suppose a guy like Paul Murphy deserves more than that too.
So, Damien, the All-Stars, I don't think there was any major shocks. Look, there's plenty to debate, as there always is when it comes to the All-Stars, but 13 for Dublin, you'd think that's fair enough, and I suppose you could go through it and do kind of a bit of a for and against, but nothing really stands out, I think.
If I ripped off my rosy blue and gold hat, I'd be really cribbing that Tip didn't get another one. They got 4. Who would you throw into the mix? I'd probably throw in Stephen O'Brien. I thought he was really, really consistent. But I think Tip's failure against Mayo really cost him a lot of nominations. Delighted to see Cavan getting 7. Exceptionally delighted to see Ian Corbett from Limerick getting in there. Ian Corbett is just a class act. He ran the game against Tipperary in the Munster semi-final that time. And it's great to see the weaker counties. When I say weaker counties, I suppose the lesser lights been recognised. But
and actually, Damien,
there's also 6 players from...
You mentioned Limerick there. Just the reaction from his teammates today on Twitter, you could actually see that it meant such a huge amount, not just to him, but to everybody. So you're right with that. Like, it, I think it lifts everybody when somebody gets an All-Star or gets an All-Star nomination in one of the less successful teams.
Marie, and it's no different to the likes of Gary Brennan or maybe Jamie Malone from your own county, whereby those guys would be up to a level. And I think it's indicative that you're probably on a team that is a lesser light, maybe down the tiers. But it's a light of beacon then, maybe, for the rest of the teammates to try and strive for. And I know for a fact that the work Billy Lee is doing with Limerick is really impressive. And I think they'll surge up in the next couple of years. But it's down to people like Corbett sticking around, Marie, because it's not easy being a star player in the team that's struggling, and he stuck around. He's got his nomination, and maybe somebody else could be inspired to drive up the levels now in the coming years and do likewise also. But no major surprises. There's six players from the 2019 All-Star football side in, so that just shows it again, the consistency. That most of them are dubs: Cluxton, Conor O'Callaghan, Fenton, Mike Fitzsimons. I suppose a lot of people were saying David Clifford maybe would he really have deserved a nomination this year. Well, he's there too, and Patrick Durkin is another player that's still, for me, I thought he was colossal this year too.
Just looking at the blue machine, it's mad when you can pick out people like Johnny Cooper and Paddy Small, that they were the people left out. You know, you do a six in a row, you just see them being all conquering.
You know what, Donnicky, you're 100% right. And for the All-Ireland final, I was privileged enough to be there working, and towards the end of the game, like from the second half onwards, Mayo were, I think, were down the men on the turnaround, and they just played keep ball for the entire second half, and they forced Mayo to run after and chase them. But Johnny Cooper then was maybe dangling a kind of a tightrope because he had been booked, and he was taken off with 7 or 8 minutes left in that game, Donica, and I just, maybe even longer, but he came down for the last, say, 6 or 7 games, he came down to the sideline, and he basically ran the defensive show from the sideline, not interfering with Desi Farrell's management or any, but adding to it. And he was just calling all the players into position, lock it down, lock it down. They were the words he was using the whole way through. He was kind of play-by-play showing the defenders maybe where they should have gone to or where they should be for the next play. And I found it fascinating because, to me, he's a coach in the making. I don't know if that interests him down the line. But I would have had him down as an All-Star nomination as well. It goes back to the old chestnut then, who do you leave out? And like, there's a lot of good defenders in there, like the likes of Aidan Farker from Armagh as well, that would be relishing their nomination too.
So Damon, we've been positive now for all of our chat, I think, so far. It's time now to focus on the article that you wrote today, and a couple of lines stuck out for me. The GAA is bracing itself for a loss of 17 million this year, and there's no guarantee as of yet of state funding this time round. And another line that stuck out as well is that potentially that this season might end up mirroring last season, and they might see the league being pushed back. What do you have for us?
Yeah, so look, I suppose that's where the club comes into the middle of the league and the intercounty. That has been pushed by some people, maybe as regards the financial side of things, because, okay, so everything was agreed on the template that the Allianz Leagues would start at the 21st of February. You know, it'd be a fairly quick transition into the Championship. They'd run right through to mid-July, and the club would take over then and run all the way through to Christmas time. And that was all probably perfectly poised, but nobody knew what way the numbers or the restrictions would be. The numbers, unfortunately, have gone through the roof. The level of fear and maybe concern out there has escalated very, very quickly too. And on the ground at GAA level, intercounty treasurers, the mood kind of turned a little bit last week with a virtual meeting. Basically, the cry from the floor was, we're not totally happy with this template to go ahead just yet. There's no money in the tank for us to run off a kind of a league, a team is to be prepared for the league. It costs between $4,000 and $5,000 to prepare a team for one training session. So that's the level you're talking about. And I think a lot of counties, their backs are to the wall. They're trying to get fundraising up and running. Maybe their sponsors haven't come through just yet with the money either. So genuine concern. How do you face into the National League with no money in the bank and no money coming from the government as of yet for 2021? There's no signpost for that coming yet. So they made the point, could we not push it back through the season a little bit and maybe start rolling out around April time, going into a championship after that, and then maybe, sorry, a club championship after that, using both of those to get money in through streaming or maybe small gate receipts if small crowds are allowed back in, and then around October launch your championship in the hope that maybe more numbers might be allowed in and that the vaccine would be rolled out and Ireland would be a safer place to do so. So that's what they're pushing for. There is a little bit of debate about that, but that was there before Christmas too. I'm not so sure will that get through. I think at the moment, January the 31st is going to be the next announcement from Croke Park. I would expect then that everything will just be pushed back maybe 2 weeks or 4 weeks at that stage. And I think that they will still aim to get the Allianz Leagues underway. And I think they'll try and finance the counties themselves. How they do that is probably, I don't have that information. information at the moment. It'll probably take a loan out. I do know last year the government were crying out for games to be played. No indication yet if there's going to be state funding for 2021. So that's the dilemma going on at central level, but the guys at ground level are really speaking up over this, and they're really, really concerned. So the money's going to have to come from somewhere to get it up and running.
I'd imagine, Damien, there are a lot of counties in a very precarious position, because just some of the things that you mentioned there, no money in the tank, backs against the wall, what it costs to run an inter-county session, let alone a team for a season. And look, let's be realistic here. February is just around the corner. Even then, like, it just all comes really, really quickly, and it's hard to see there being any people in anywhere in the foreseeable.
Definitely so. And I think, in fairness to the GEA last year and all the times I was on you guys, on with you guys, the GEA was quick enough to adopt or tweak the template of what was happening, but they were always being guided by public health advice. That will be the case this time around again. There's no way anybody can look further than 3 weeks down the line, even where we're at the moment. And hopefully the medical emergency situation won't escalate any further. I think at the moment they are not looking any further than January the 31st, and at that stage they'll make a call on it. But again, that call will be very, very short term. It'll maybe just delaying matters for another fortnight until they see where they're at. If you're looking at it from the naked eye, it's going to be very, very hard to see any games being played for the next 2 to 3 months. Equally, when you see crowds in, is anybody's guess at that stage. But I think a few things will happen in the interim. The GEA won't go back and won't resume games until it's safe to do so. The Gaelic players obviously will be a huge part of that consultation. I think, will they receive word from the government that the government want those games to go ahead and could be financial assistance there? They'll be massive kind of variables in the future going ahead, but the GEA will be keen to play the Allianz Leagues. They'll be keen to get a good window into the Championship, and I think the split season has proven to be a successful model. It's just right now there isn't money. County boards have put creditors on hold. They've paused loans. They're fundraising to beat the ban, Marie, to be honest with you, and I think, like, anything they're doing to try and bring money in, they are. But during COVID times, it's not easy to get out and about into the community to fundraise too. So everything is nearly online, and that brings its own challenges as well. Look, it's nothing that the GEA wouldn't have expected, but I think that the level of cases we've had post-Christmas has probably caught everybody on the hop. And I think you're hoping for, obviously, those cases to go down and a vaccine rollout before maybe players can commence training and games can be played in earnest as well.
I mean, it's bound to be different for every county board, unique circumstances, but there is good examples. And you mentioned the volunteers there, the inter-county treasurers. Yeah. Are they sharing ideas, the likes of Roscommon, Wexford, on, you know, if you can't get them through the gate, is there different ways? You mentioned stream, and how do you make it happen?
Yeah, so absolutely, Donica. I think certainly not sharing ideas, but they're trying to get one up in each other.
Okay.
Their own counties thriving. And I think even the national draw, the Croke Park run, that's been put back a little bit as well for clubs. So club revenue is not there anymore. I think Roscommon are a great example. Like, they're not a superpower in terms of football, but they've just made 905,000 euro profit from their raffling a house in London. And they did everything perfectly. It was the second time they attempted a raffle like that. They made around 900,000 profit the first time as well. But that money was used to clear their debts. So the next money is being used to kind of rejuvenate Dr. Hyde Park and get the Centre of Excellence up and running. So that's a good example of what can be done. Wexford had astute management. They boasted a surplus of 500,000 euro last year as well. So certainly it can be done. At the moment, Leitrim GEA have 1,000 people signed up to walk 50 miles during January. And that's going to raise well over 50,000, if not even closer to 100. And that money is colossal to a county like Leitrim, but it ties in the whole community and kind of gels the team and the community back closer together again. So I think other counties, like my own county in Tipperary, have appointed a commercial manager, Liam O'Shea, and his job will be go out and try and maybe bring in interested parties that could be there for associations or sponsorship. So you're right, Donica, every single county has a unique set of challenges, and they're probably looking at their own situation. How perilous is it? How many creditors can they hold off? Because there will be a lot of loyalty built up at local level, and they would get away with pausing some repayments, but they don't want to be going into 2022 still paying off 2021 debts either. Nobody wants that, and it's improper practice if you can be helped at all. So yeah, you're right, every county board different set of challenges ahead.
Okay, Damien, well, we'll probably talk to you next week for a retirement roundup, because that seems like the only thing that's happening right now. Thanks so much for taking the call. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back to talk about the biggest game of the season so far, Manchester United versus Liverpool. It's really hard to believe that it is the first time since 1997 that a Liverpool and Manchester United game has been a first versus second. There's plenty to go through. We'll be back shortly.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back, Donica. Sometimes when we're chatting and we're building up games, I always think, okay, we're making a big deal out of this. Is it really worth it? But I think when it comes to Manchester United and Liverpool, it always feels like it is such a big deal and deserved of all the hype.
I'm just worried, will you be this chirpy about it on Monday if it doesn't go your way?
That's true. Well, either Ruby or I will be both, one of us will be unhappy. And if it's a draw, I'd say both of us will be unhappy.
Yeah,
but anyway, now I'm delighted to say that we are joined by RTÉ pundit Alan Cawley and also Sunday World journalist Kevin Palmer. And I'm going to go to you first, because we've had you on so often talking about Manchester United, and a lot of the time it was given out about Manchester United as well. But to be in this situation, 3 points clear, the top of the league in January, I don't think anyone really thought that this would be the situation that Manchester United are in.
Evening, Marie. Evening, Donica. And I know Donica is very much looking forward to my response to this one because of the stick I've given Solskjaer. But to be fair, Marie, it's hard to criticise them in terms of the run of form that they're on and the amount of games that they've won. Do I think they'll go on and win the league? I'm still not convinced. The teams that they've beaten, to be fair, are teams you would expect them to beat. But as I say, it's hard to criticise the run of form. And if you go back to this time last year, a year ago, when they played Liverpool, they lost 2-0. Since then, they've been unbeaten away from home the whole year, and Liverpool have been unbeaten in something like 67 games at home. So something will give in the game on Sunday. But as you say, I'm still not convinced in terms of being Solskjaer being the long-term manager. But the fact that they're on top in January, I think it just goes to show, I suppose, how much the fans have been starved of success at Man United, that they're jumping for joy just to be on top in January. But I still think it's going to be between Liverpool and Man City. They've yet to convince me, but if they were to go to the likes of Anfield, who I think Liverpool are the best team along with Man City, if they were to go and beat one of them, because I still feel as though they haven't beaten one of the big teams in the big games. You look at Solskjaer, he hasn't got through a semi-final. And even though there was a lot of optimism, the fact that they went top beating Burnley the other night, I would still temper a little bit of that optimism with the fact that they played Man City in a semi-final just 5 days previous and were completely outplayed. So I'm yet to be convinced. Hopefully I might be convinced on Sunday, Marie, but it's an absolutely huge game, a mouth-watering game.
It really is. Well, let's hear from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
The next one is always the biggest. It's always the most important, being, of course, where we're in the league. That just gives us more confidence, and it's a sign of, or an indication of, where we're at, but the game against the champions, they've got an amazing record at Anfield in the league. They haven't lost for many years, so of course it's a great test for us. Can we go there and cause an upset?
Kevin, cause an upset, I'm not really sure about that, just given everything that is going on with Liverpool at the moment. But at the same time, Ole has said during the week that it's a good time to play Manchester or to play Liverpool. Do you think it is, just given the fact that they are kind of struggling for consistency, which is something that is hard to say about Liverpool when you think of the last 3 years?
Hi, Marie. Lovely to talk to you again. I mean, I think it is a good time to play Liverpool on paper, but the one issue I would have, we were with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher on Zoom for an hour yesterday, a wonderfully entertaining chat with all the journalists. We had great fun with the banter going back and forth, a bit like yourself and Ruby, I'm sure, has been in the studio in recent weeks. And there is a sense that Liverpool are vulnerable, but there's also a sense that they're determined to not let themselves be knocked off their perch, as they would say, as Alex Ferguson might have said back in the day. And they've had a full 9-10 days to prepare for this since that Aston Villa Cup game, which was a little more than a training match really against the Villa youth team players. If they won't want to allow Manchester United to come into Anfield, even though an empty Anfield, which is clearly going to help them. Imagine a packed out Anfield on Sunday with the crowd and the cop right behind Liverpool. It would really change the dynamics of this game. But so that point of view, United are getting lucky to not have to face the Anfield crowd. But I think that Liverpool will see this as an opportunity to kind of reboot their season. There's some issues behind the scenes. I think there's potentially some problems with Mo Salah. He's not been quite right since the whole COVID incident out in Egypt. There's some issues with the defence, obviously, and Klopp wants to buy a player and the club are not backing him, which I think is a major gamble, really, when they've got themselves into such a dominant position in English football at the moment. To not buy a defender this month is a mistake, and I'm sure they could afford it if they needed to, but they've decided not to at this point. So it's an interesting dynamic around the game. There's so many different angles, and I mean, amid the chaos that we're all living through at the moment, guys, thank God we've got something like this on Sunday to look forward to, because it really does keep us all going and give us something to watch in this mad world that we're living through.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, going on the road won't faze United. They're quite good at it, but you've not only been tough on Ollie, you've been tough on Pogba. Do you think he's hitting his traps now, and is he doing it for the team or to keep his value?
I've been tough on Pogba with good justification, to be honest with you, Donegal, because absolutely, £100 million pound player. And honestly, it annoys me. Gary Neville is on the television the other night and he's talking about how great Pogba is and all. And let's be honest, the last few weeks he's been a bit better. They played Burnley the other night. £100 million player should be dominating against Burnley. Bruno Fernandes does it every week. Kevin De Bruyne does it every week. Jack Grealish is doing it every week for Aston Villa. This is the criticism of Pogba, that he doesn't do it every week. But to be fair to him, the last couple of weeks it looks like he's knuckled down a little bit after the disturbance with the agent and stuff like that. It looks like they've got a bit of a reaction from him. He is playing a bit better. But it'll be interesting, even just going into the game, and you look at, I suppose, tactically how both managers will approach it. At the moment, Solskjaer goes into all the top games and he'll always play the defensive solidity of two defensive players with McTominay and Fred, because he doesn't trust the legs of Matic and Pogba in a big game. It'll be interesting to see, does he do that? And I think he will, which means it'll free up Pogba to probably play on the left side of a three, because it looks like Martial will be injured. So the criticism, I think, is fully justified, Donegal, to be honest with you. But this is the game he has to stand up now. Pogba has to go into this game and take over and dominate the game like a top player should, like a De Bruyne would, like Fernandes has been doing. Because if I go back to the semi-final again, only 5 days previous against Man City, he didn't get a kick in that game. Yet it's okay doing it in Turf Moor against Burnley, but he needs to do it at Anfield against Liverpool to deserve the rave reviews that some people are giving him over the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Kevin, interestingly, Patrick Davison, who's a reporter with Sky Sports, did an interview with him over the last couple of days, and yeah, he was tweeting after it saying that to actually sit down and talk to him face to face, he's actually not a bad guy. It's just the fact that the only words that you're hearing really from Pogba are through his agent. And if you actually got to see him and hear from him and get a little bit of a sense of his personality, that maybe he wouldn't get the criticism and people would understand him a little bit more.
Well, it's a decent point, really. I mean, I think we've seen with Rooney when he went on to Monday Night Football with Sky and John Terry, and that these guys have kind of reputations that are maybe a little bit difficult, and maybe they're challenging characters. But when we saw them in the flesh and speaking as openly as they were, it actually did them a lot of good. On the case of Pogba, I just think, I mean, I'm with Alan on this. This has been going on for far too long. His agent is a menace. And if Pogba didn't want the agent to speak, he could come out and tell the guy to shut up and stop spouting all the stuff that he does every few months. And quite clearly, as Gary Neville openly admits, and I'm sure he's been told this by Solskjaer and people at the club, Pogba doesn't want to be there. He hasn't wanted to be there virtually since he got there. And the whole Paul Pogba sort of show is just building up to the next big transfer in the summer. And I think what's happened is they've looked at it and said, Raiola and him have looked at it and said, they're not going to get the move now. They may as well just knuckle down for a few months, try and rebuild some of the reputation that they've broken between them. And I just, the idea that Pogba is unaware that Raiola is going to come out and say this stuff is nonsense. He would have told him by now if he didn't want him to be his mouthpiece. And it's pretty embarrassing that a World Cup winner and a player of that standing allows this guy to go out there and spout the nonsense he does. So now I think all the criticism that comes Pogba's way is justified. He hasn't lived up to his billing at Manchester United in any way, in my opinion, for $89 million. And if they can get most of that money back from Real Madrid, if that's where they want to go, or Paris Saint-Germain, if they're mad enough to take him, and then good luck to them in the summer. And I wouldn't back him to do what Alan said on Sunday, you know, that he needs to stand up and do it. Does anyone really, really think Paul Pogba's reliable enough to perform in a big game? I certainly don't. So I would think he'd be bossed by Jordan Henderson and the rest on Sunday, and that'll be one of the reasons why I think Liverpool will win on Sunday.
And that does bring us on nicely to how Liverpool are going to set up, because there is questions obviously over Matip and his fitness and whether he will partner Fabinho at the centre of defence. And, you know, if he isn't fit, then does Henderson drop back, or do you put one of the youngsters in the role?
See, this is the major dilemma for Klopp, and this is one of the reasons why I think he's been struggling, Marie, this year, in terms of, you look at Klopp at the moment, and I think he's a little bit tetchy. We saw the interview with Des Kelly, obviously, a few weeks ago. Some of his press conferences, like he was bringing up the Man United penalty situation. He just doesn't seem to be fully in control of his emotions the way he always is. And I think that's largely down to the problems that he has on the pitch, in terms of particularly the loss of Van Dijk and Gomez. Last week against Newcastle, he played Fabinho and Henderson as the two centre halves, because he's been flouting with the boy Williams and Phillips, but none of them are good enough, Marie, either of them, and I don't think he trusts them to put them into a big game for that reason. The problem he has, though, if he takes Henderson out of the midfield and plays him at centre half like he did against Newcastle, you miss all that drive and determination from the captain and from what Henderson gives you, and Liverpool need that badly. So he has a major decision to make. If Matip is fit, obviously he'd play alongside Fabinho, but I can't see him putting two centre halves, certainly not Henderson there, because it certainly didn't work against Newcastle, and it won't work on Sunday if he does it. So like Kevin said earlier about maybe Klopp feeling behind the scenes, he wants the club to back him to go out and sign a centre half. I think they need to sign a centre half if they're going to go on and win the league, because he can't keep jumping between putting centre halves at centre defence, because you're not getting exactly what the same amount as what you would get from them if they were playing the centre midfield area. And likewise, if you take them out of that centre midfield area, particularly Henderson, who's your driving force and has been one of Liverpool's best players over the last 18 months, you take that away from him as well, it's a major loss for them. So he has a big decision to make of who plays centre half on Sunday.
Kevin, it's interesting because, you know, you can talk and talk about the difficulties at the back, but it's funny because there isn't a massive worry, because you think then up the front, okay, if they do concede a goal at the back, the chances are, the likelihood is, that those front three are going to score.
Well, you think that, but they haven't scored the last two games, and they haven't looked themselves in a way. I think the goals Sadio Mane got against Villa, even though it was a junior team they were up against, that'll give him a little bit of confidence. He's been on a tetchy run. And I just look at Salah, and I wonder whether he's had his head turned from an agent, or Paris Saint-Germain have been mentioned, whether he thinks he's off there in the summer, because he hasn't been right since the COVID situation. It wouldn't surprise me if going to his brother's wedding and getting COVID didn't go down very well with Liverpool, whether he was pretty severely punished by the club, and he's kind of having a mini sulk on the back of that, and he just hasn't been right the last few weeks. And you would think Diogo Jota would have been close to playing on Sunday if he was fit, and he doesn't look like he's going to be back for another month at least. So I think they need those front three to start firing again, because the main issue they have is not actually the defence, because they haven't been conceding too many goals. They actually conceded the 7 goals at Aston Villa when Van Dijk was playing, so it's kind of a strange scenario that they haven't missed him so much defensively. But I agree with Alan, putting Henderson in that back four doesn't work, and it looked to me like Klopp was doing that to almost highlight to the owners that I need a defender here. I mean, you're making me play central midfielders in defence, and it's just not going to work. But it's very hard to do it in January. There's not many players out there, and as far as Liverpool are concerned, the word coming out of the club is that finances are tight, and they might look at a loan deal, but they're not going to look at a permanent deal. And I think they're leaving Klopp very short, considering what the man has achieved at that club. I think he should be back this month, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Kevin, you don't feel it will happen? It just, when you look at it, I know all field finances can be really tough, and you mentioned that they might need to keep money in the pot to hold on to the talent they actually have, but you know, if you're going to win a league, you need to shore up that problem.
I just think, I mean, this is Donica, this is a serious issue now. You've got Van Dijk and Gomez out. I mean, Van Dijk might play in the last month of the season, they're saying, but that would sound rushed. You would know about cruciate ligament injuries from your sporting career, and you would know that trying to get somebody back in 6 to 7 months from an injury like that sounds over-rushing things. And I just think that they're desperately trying to hope that they can limp through the season and get away with it. But that's not what you want. I mean, Liverpool have waited 30 years to win this Premier League title. They've got to the position they want to be in, and now they're almost sort of threatening to lose it, but purely partly because of their own sort of lack of effort in the transfer window. And I just think it's fairly obvious they needed a player on January the 1st. We did the columns we do with John Aldridge in the Sunday World every week. He's been banging on about them getting a defender in as quickly as possible. Jamie Carragher said it. Gary Neville said it yesterday in the phone call we had with him. And it's blindingly obvious they need a player in. It doesn't have to be a world-class World Cup winner. They don't have to spend 50 million, but they need a defender this month to give themselves a chance to in all competitions. I mean, you can't play Jordan Henderson, Fabinho there and expect to get away with it in the Champions League and the Premier League. They're going to get found out. I think Man City, at the moment, are the title favourites on the back of the fact that Liverpool aren't going to sign a defender. But what happens on Sunday, the Man United odds will be tumbling, and Alan will be getting very excited if they win at Anfield, they can tell you.
Alan, you mentioned Fernandes there. Just trying to contain him for Liverpool, how are they going to do it?
Yeah, he's been phenomenal, Marie. And I mentioned the stat about since the game they played last year, a year ago. Man United have actually accumulated more points since then over Liverpool. I think that stat was doing around 2 or 3 weeks ago, and that accumulated 65 points to Liverpool 62. And it's largely down to him. And like when all the criticism was coming in of Man United over the last probably 2-3 years, you all thought maybe 3 or 4 players were needed. I still think 3 or 4 players are needed to get them to win the league, but nobody envisaged one player would transform the whole team, and he literally has on his own. He's phenomenal. And he's the type of... he's the standard and calibre player that Man United should have always been signing and should always aspire to sign, because he's the very, very best. He's been phenomenal. Like, people are comparing him now to De Bruyne, and that just goes to show, I suppose, the influence that he's had on this Man United team since he's come in. He's been unreal. He's been quiet enough by his standards in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I don't mind that, because you don't want to become too reliant on one player either. I don't think that's good for a team or the squad, but he demands so much from the rest of them. And sometimes I look at him and I think he's probably thinking to himself as well, I still think there's 2 or 3 players that need to come in just to get them to that very, very elite level of what Liverpool and Man City are. Because if you look at the league table at the moment, Marie, they've played 17 games, so you could have got 51 points. They have 36. So it just goes to show, when you think of the standards, the points Liverpool and Man City were accumulating over the last 2 or 3 seasons and the standards they were setting, it's more a case of them two coming back to the pack rather than Man United actually closing the gap in terms of the points tally. But still, they're there on merit at the top of the league. They can't do anything about what's going on at other clubs. So, but I just need to be convinced by them going to Anfield and putting a top quality performance that would make me believe that they're on the right track to go and win a league, because I'm not convinced as of yet.
Well, a top class performance from Fernandes would definitely set them on the way. Klopp was asked about him today. Let's hear what he said.
He's an outstanding player. We played before he joined United. We played against Sporting in USA on a tour. And that game already, you could see, wow. And obviously everybody knew him. But in that game, the first time I played against, my team played against a team he was involved, you could really see he's a difference maker. And that's what he shows now. And it's settled. He's a very influential player for United, obviously involved in a lot of things. I know people talk mostly about the goal involvements, which is very important stuff, but he's a link up in a lot of other situations as well. Don't know him well enough to really can judge that, but he seems to be a leader as well. So, yeah, good signing, unfortunately, for United.
Kevin and Alan, we are almost out of time. So, in a word, Alan, who will win?
Liverpool.
And Kevin?
Liverpool 2-1.
Okay, well, I like the sound of that. Okay, guys, thanks so much for joining us. That is all that we have time for this week. Thanks to Ronan, Lorelei, and all the team who are with us all week. We'll be back on Monday when hopefully I'll be happy, but we'll have to wait and see. The official chart show with Blonde and Tracy is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.